I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Brianna.
And welcome back to Corrupted Beings. Welcome back to episode 3, guys.
Hi.
So, this will be the first episode of cults, which is what Brianna would like to call her area of expertise.
I love cults. And this time, our first cult is The Family, which is an Australian cult, also known as, if I can pronounce this, Satanin Park Association. Keeping it in. I'm not editing that out.
So, little side note is, I know you sent me your notes to go over, but, like, I've never heard about this. So, yeah. Like, I read them, but I wasn't, like, really grasping the information, so I'm really excited to hear about this.
Yes, they're also called the Great White Brotherhood, but that's separate, because the Great White Brotherhood is its own thing. It's just associated with this cult.
Heard that.
This cult, though, is called The Family. It's an Australian cult that went on, it was, like, majorly in the 70s and the 80s, and it's a wild ride. Warning, this episode is going to include child abuse. Nothing sexual that I heard of in my research, but there is talk of children being abused. So just a little bit about the cult. It was started in Australia, Victoria, Australia, to be exact, by Anne Hamilton. So Anne Hamilton was born Evelyn Grace Victoria Edwards to Ralph Edwards and Florence Hoyle in Victoria, Australia. Before her parents met, Ralph had a first wife that passed away during childbirth, but he was off at the First World War. When he returned from war, he met Florence. They were both, like, it was like a whirlwind, and they got married, and they were super happy when they had children. They had 7 children altogether. I'm pretty sure she's the youngest. So after Evelyn, aka Anne, was born, Ralph just disappeared. And he came in and out of her childhood. He was never really a constant. And then at a certain time, he just, like, bounced completely.
Yeah.
Her mom was absent in a different way. She was, like, mentally absent.
So she just checked out.
Yes. Her mom, Florence, was a self-proclaimed medium who claimed she could talk to the other side.
Love that.
She heard voices. She saw visions. She, like, talked to people about it. But it was later revealed that she was just a schizophrenic.
Hmm.
And so she spent pretty much a majority of Evelyn's childhood in mental hospitals, which caused Evelyn to be in and out of orphanages. And it had a major impact on the rest of her life because she just felt abandoned by her parents. Her mom couldn't really take care of her. Her dad kept leaving. So there was just that sense of abandonment. There's nothing known between when she was like a child to when she turned 20 in 1942. She had reemerged. She was a new girl. She was completely reinvented. She changed her hair. She changed her name. She changed everything. And she started going by Anne Hamilton. She would tell people that her mother was from a family of French aristocrats and that she was a descendant of royalty.
Oh, so she had high hopes for herself.
Yes.
Interesting.
She had a way better backstory than her real backstory.
I mean, hey, you know, isn't that the point?
Yeah. So soon after she reemerged as Anne Hamilton, she met Lionel Harris. He was in the army. And they got married like a year of meeting.
Talk about daddy issues.
I know. Yeah. So she met this dude who was in the army. They married after a year. After they got married, he had to go back. And she was like, no, I don't want you going back. So they ran away. And they went to Victoria. And they started making plans of their future. But 8 months after they got married, Lionel was arrested.
Yeah, because you can't just up and leave the military.
Yeah, so military police found them. And he was forced to serve another year before he was honorably discharged. Which makes no sense. Like, you ran away from your duty, but you're being honorably discharged. So once he was discharged, they were elated because they could finally start the family they wanted to start a year prior before he got arrested. And so they started looking to adopt a child. I don't know why they wanted to adopt a child. I don't know if it had, like, if one of them was infertile or if anything. I don't know.
Could it have been with the fact that she was in the orphanage? And so she, like,
maybe wanted to adopt a child. There's not much on that.
Yeah.
And they found a place that had a baby boy that was available, and it was perfect. This was in the 50s. But sadly, they never got the chance to get that child, because on January 8th, 1955, when Lionel was heading home, right before they were scheduled to go get their baby boy, his vehicle collided with another, and the 33-year-old died because of the accident. Anne felt horrible. The grief was like, what? Like, there was so much grief because she felt that abandonment that she was trying to run away from in her childhood. To help her, Anne started doing yoga, and she got very fascinated with yoga and Eastern mysticism, I want to say. And she used it to help her grief. For the first time in her life, she felt peace, and she got very involved and eventually got her offered her own spot as an instructor at the yoga studio she went to all the time. And she was phenomenal at it. Her classes were like the class. Like, everybody wanted to get into Anne's classes, and she was super popular, especially amongst older wealthy women whose husbands were slowly leaving them for younger women, because, you know, that's what happens with rich men.
Yeah.
First wives club shit, you know what I mean?
You know, men are trash.
Yeah. And they, a lot of them were struggling with all the stuff Anne was struggling with before she found yoga, so Anne helped them. They all looked up to Anne and her teaching, and she actually convinced a lot of them to leave their husbands, and she was very feminist. Like, you don't need a man, you don't need anybody.
She sounds like she made, like, a pretty, like, good life for herself.
Just you wait.
Oh, boy.
After a while, she started realizing, while teaching yoga, she finally had complete control of something, and she had people she could manipulate that always listened to her 100%.
Mm.
And she loved it, because she didn't have that before.
The power.
But she realized if she wanted to do anything, she needed to get prominent people backing her.
Mm.
By the early 1960s, after having become stunningly beautiful, she bleached her hair. She started to claim that she was clairvoyant like her mother, and she was able to help people escape their worldly cares and reach nirvana. She was poorly educated, but lacking neither ambition nor self-confidence, Anne read widely in New Age mysticism, and she slowly developed her own religion.
So, basically, back then is the same as now. You don't need an education, you just need to be confident and gorgeous.
Yes. And in 1962, she started to attract people to her religion through her yoga classes in the Melbourne suburb.
Well, speaking, like, I took yoga, and I was a big part of yoga for a time, and, like, that is, like, it's, in itself, it's very relaxing, so I could see how she could use that
to control people.
To control people.
So, in 1962, she was like, I got a religion, I got some followers.
Did she name her religion?
No, not really.
Okay.
It's just called The Family. If there was a name, they don't talk about it.
Probably Fight Club.
Right.
Rule of Fight Club. We don't talk about Fight Club.
Exactly. So in 1962, she decided she needed to acquire her first, what I call, cult conspirator. Stutter much. Rainer Johnson.
That's a cool name.
Right. He was a well-respected scientist working at the local university, so I believe he was a doctor. She knew if she could get him, she would have access to his wide network of rich people that could fund her religion, which every religion needs money.
Basically.
Yeah.
It's the root of all evil, but every religion asks for it.
Exactly. So she needed to get to him. So she decided to sleep with his landscaper to get intel on him and his wife.
Because that's what we do.
Yes.
Start from the bottom and work your way to the top.
After a few months on December 21st, in 1962, she got some good intel, and she found out that Dr. Johnson and his wife were going to India. So she walked on up to his front door, bang, knock, bang, knock, bang, knock. And she said, "You don't know me, but I know you, and
that's
I know you're planning a trip to India with your wife, and I want you to know she's going to get sick over there." But he's like, this crazy lady's coming up to me saying I'm going to India, which is, like, people know, so it's not, like, wild. But she's saying my wife's going to get sick. That's wild. And so he decided to go to India anyway, him and his wife. And to help out Anne's cause, his wife got sick with listeria.
How?
Yes. So after she got sick, he thought about what Anne said, and then they returned home. He was completely convinced that Anne was some prophet.
How did Anne know that his wife was going
to get sick? I mean, lucky. You have a 50-50 chance. Either she's going to get sick or not.
Yeah, I guess.
She said very vague, your wife's going to get sick in India. And then, I mean,
She got sick.
So, they started talking because he was like, this bitch is a prophet. And she made her life sound way worse than it really was. Because keep in mind, she only lost her husband and she didn't get to adopt a child. No. She lost her husband. In addition to that, she lost three children in the car accident. And she wanted to help open his mind and promise Dr. Johnson life-changing experiences if he joined her. So, and he was already interested in idealism, so he was down. And after 1963, Anne proved her powers once again. A woman named Fran Parker, who was a yoga student, rolled her car and fractured her skull. While she was in the hospital, Anne went and visited her to offer some spiritual assistance. The doctors had told Fran she might lose her sight, but it was a slim chance she was going to lose her sight. They were just saying, like, it's a possibility. So, you know, Anne, she heard that it was a possibility, and she's like, 50-50 chance again. She goes on in there, and she was like, you're not losing your sight. I'm here for you. And she, quote-unquote, healed her. But those around Anne believed that Anne's healing were the reason she did not lose her sight. It had nothing to do with the fact that there was only like a 20% chance. It had to do with the fact that Anne happened to go visit her.
This kind of reminds me of that episode of Supernatural when they go to the healer that healed Dean. Yeah. And it's because he made a deal with the Grim Reaper or whatever.
Yeah. It's just wild. So everybody was starting to believe that Anne was the Christ incarnate. So she started styling herself to be the reincarnation of Jesus. A living God, as
Finding
she explained.
Jesus, question mark?
Yes. Anne explained that Jesus had reincarnated as a beautiful blonde woman because he had previously come as a bearded man. And if he had come with a beard again, he might have been recognized and persecuted once more.
Oh,
so he came as a woman.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm sorry. As the religious part of this, I laugh because what the heck?
Hey, as the non-religious part of this, I laugh because... what the fuck? Okay, so everyone believed her. And obviously, you can't have Jesus without his besties.
Right.
So, of course, her most prominent, the ones that paid her the most moolah, also were reincarnates.
That makes sense.
Right? So Dr. Johnson was John the Baptist, and they had to refer to him as such. So John the Baptist came back, Caitlin.
Good old Johnny boy.
Yeah, he came back. And it was Dr. Johnson. So around 1964, Raynor Johnson was hosting regular meetings of a religious and philosophical discussion led by Hamilton at his home at Fernie Creek in the Dandenong Ranges. I don't know. I'm sorry, Australia. I know none of you listen yet, but I love you. It's in the outskirts of Melbourne. Also connected was a series of weekly talks that he gave at the Council of Adult Education in Melbourne entitled the... not even gonna say it. And they started putting more money towards the cult, and soon they were able to get a compound. Like, every cult, they need a compound. You know what I mean? They all gotta live together. They can't be touched by the outside world.
Because that's just what we do.
Yeah. And they started expanding, so the group purchased an adjoining property.
Properly.
Which they named after their cult, in 1968 and constructed a meeting hall. They had a little lodge. So in 1968...
I'm curious how much money she got.
Oh my god, millions. Straight up, she scammed people out of millions.
So she walks in, basically predicts a little future, and then they just give her
money.
Oh
no, I'll tell you how she gets it. Okay.
Okay.
She did get married... to a guy, Bill, I don't know how to say his last name, I think it's Brian. So she became Anne Hamilton Brine. But I'm just going to call her Anne because I don't feel like saying last names. So, with every cult, you got doomsday shit. Anne claimed that an apocalypse was going to happen sometime in the 80s, and that everybody in the cult would be safe from the apocalypse, but everybody else on the planet would be wiped out. Just their cult would be good. Like, only people that followed their specific religion would be saved by the apocalypse and God.
Sounds familiar. Hello, Hitler.
Oh, there's more connections to Hitler. Just you wait. This happened at the same time as the Cuban Missile Crisis, and everyone was afraid of nuclear war and stuff, so she leaned hard into that. She was like, a nuclear war is gonna come. They're gonna, you know, there's gonna be an apocalypse. Like, we're safe, though. Only those couple people were safe. So her cult was growing. Anne wanted that baby boy she never got. So,
she's bitter about this baby boy.
Oh, she wants children so bad because she's never been able to have children of her own. But since she was a single woman, she had, it was, this was before she met Bill.
Okay.
It was super hard to adopt as a single woman.
Well, even nowadays, it's still hard
to adopt as a single woman. Until recently, it's been super hard.
Yeah.
And she wanted to bypass that. So you know what she did? She started recruiting lawyers, doctors, and scientists that she could use to her benefit. Lawyers were able to provide legal protection. They could forge documents like birth certificates. Doctors were able to let her know about young mothers at the hospital. Nurses were able to, you know, get the babies. And that's politicians creepy. Helped her keep the police away.
That's creepy.
So the other plus of the doctors, with having doctors in the cult, was they were able to get LSD, which at the time was legal for medical professionals in Australia.
Charles Manson question
This
mark?
Is how she got her money. Because she would use it to control her members. She would place a member in a pitch black room, all the lights off, inject them with LSD. You can take it by the mouth, but injecting it happens way faster. Leave them.
Charles Manson?
Yes.
Question mark?
Oh, just wait. She would leave them in there for hours after being injected. And after a few hours, the door would open and suddenly there would be Anne, her beautiful blonde hair in a white flowy dress with a bucket of dry ice behind her, producing like a smoky figure.
What a genius.
And she would talk to them. And so these people would come out and being like, holy shit, I saw Jesus. And it was Anne. She really is Jesus. I saw him.
Oh my gosh.
And that was the initiation too. Okay. That's how she got these people, because they genuinely, they pretty much tripped out, and she made them think that their trip showed them a vision that she was Jesus. So she had about 500 members in the medical field. Yeah, fast. She got this. This is all, like, within a span of, like, 20 years. She got this stuff fast. They helped her to get children. The first child Anne was able to get was a baby girl called Sarah Moore. She is the most talkative out of all the children. She has books. She's done so much. She is sadly no longer alive. She passed away in 2016. But if it wasn't for her, this might still be going on.
Wow.
So, little sneak peek. The baby's... Sarah's mother was a 15-year-old single teen mom who had been disowned by her family, and the father was nowhere to be found. So, she was alone when she gave birth, and the doctor happened to be a member of Anne's cult. So, after she gave birth, they held a pillow over her face while they tranquilized her and forced her to sign over the baby for adoption, and then kidnapped the baby and brought her to Anne. So Anne technically adopted her, and the lawyers helped her forge the documents and bypass. She had members of social services that helped her bypass all the steps in her cult. Many nurses would straight up just kidnap the babies from the mothers, and they would do a whole bunch of stuff. The biggest scam they did, they called miracles. The doctors would slowly poison women after giving birth, so they would think they were sick while in the hospital. The doctors would then tell them that they knew someone who could help them that would bring them back to health, Anne. But Anne's price was she had to be able to adopt their children to heal them. So many of the women took it because they're like, I want to get better. I don't want to die. You can have my child. And miracle, they didn't die. The doctors stopped poisoning them. Okay. And they were perfectly fine after a week.
Like, true crime me was like, this is genius. Moral correct me is like, this is so screwed up, it's not even funny.
So Anne would get the children. She was able to get a total of 28 children between scams and convincing. Some members, only not many, but a couple members procreated for specifically Anne. And just gave them her children. Okay, their children. Gave her their...
So, did she find out that she physically couldn't have children?
No, she just never tried. That I heard of. From what I heard, her and her husband, Bill, didn't try. She claimed, though. She lied. And said, like, oh, I just had a baby. And she would wear maternity clothes and stuff. And make them think. That's how she would make sure these members didn't know she was kidnapping the babies. Only the people doing it knew.
Oh, okay. So not everyone knew.
Not everyone knew. They thought, a lot of them thought...
that all these babies were hers.
She would adopt and be like, oh, I'm such a great person. I adopted this baby. Okay, and then the ones that she didn't adopt, she birthed.
Okay.
And modeled the children after the Von Trapp family from The Sound of Music.
Okay, but that's my favorite
movie.
Because
she thought they were perfection, because she agreed with Hitler, that the perfect child was white, blonde, blue-eyed. Not all of her kids were blue eyes.
Hey, it's me.
Not all of her kids were blonde and had blue eyes, so she bleached their hair their whole lives. She bleached their hair blonde.
Sounds like a girl went to used to go to high school with.
And she cut all their hair the same in a bowl cut. Every single kid. Wait till you see the pictures. They're creepy. And she dressed them all in the same formal wear, same shoes, same dresses, everything. whether they were a boy or a girl, they looked identical.
Brie, you just ruined the Sound of Music for me. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I feel like the Nazis should have ruined that for you.
Okay, well, they were only in it for like a second.
I know. So as the family were growing, they had to expand their compound, so they purchased homes around Lake Eildon. It's E-I-L-D-O-N. I don't know how to say it. The children lived on one of the properties, and the adults would live on another. So, like, a lot of people... The children were kept a secret from a lot of people.
So who took care of the children?
The nannies, a.k.a. the aunties.
Mm.
So they had multiple compounds. They had one in Catskills, New York, and Hawaii on top of Australia.
Oh,
so they
were
international.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and traveled between them all the time. The children believed that she... All the children believed she was their biological mother. They genuinely believed she birthed 28 children. The children, at least, not the members. The children did.
Ouch.
Yeah. Not that it's not possible. I mean...
No, but ouch.
She would wear maternity clothes and lie and say she had a baby, which I already said. But she lost the interest... in the kids, after a while. Like, pretty much once they were toddlers, she didn't give a shit about them anymore. She only cared about babies. Okay. That's why she had 28 kids, because she wanted the babies.
Mm.
And she had three nannies, a.k.a. the aunties, like I said, and they looked after the children. The three main ones were Margot McKellen, Trish McFarlane, and Elizabeth Whittaker. They made sure the children followed all the rules, and there was a lot of rules. And if they didn't follow the rules... they were punished, they were whipped, they were beaten, and they were waterboarded. Say something went missing or something happened and the kids wouldn't admit who did it, they would take them out to a bucket outside and dunk them in water till they almost passed out, lift them up, say, are you gonna tell me? Kids say no, dunk them back in until someone confessed.
That's such brutal treatment and punishment.
Yeah, these poor kids. And it didn't matter the age. They did it all throughout. And so the children's lives, every single day was exactly the same. They would wake up at 5:30 a.m. They had to make their beds. They would meditate for an hour, like do yoga. Then they went to school on the property. The family taught a mixture of Christianity and Hinduism with other Eastern and Western religions on the principle that spiritual truths are universal. The children studied the major scriptures of these religions and the works of fashionable gurus such as... How do you say that?
Sri...
Chinmoy? I don't know. Mihir Baba and
Rajneesh.
Okay. The group had an inner circle who justified their actions by their claim to be avatars in the apostles of Jesus.
And that would be like John the Baptist and all them.
Yes.
Yes.
And Anne was Jesus. So obviously her kids had to know about every religion up the fact that she was Jesus and these are Jesus's children.
Yeah, because Jesus totally had kids.
Yes, Jesus had kids. You didn't know that?
No, I didn't. Apparently I skipped that lesson in Sunday school.
Yes. On top of all that, Anne was not... The aunties technically beat all the children and Anne says she never did it, but she would... have them call her while they were beating the children and she would scream at them and listen to them get beaten when she wasn't there and she would watch it happen. So
it's disgusting.
And they also starved the children. They kept all the food locked up or an auntie would be like guarding the kitchen, but all the drawers, all the cabinets, anything that held food was padlocked. The children were only allowed either like a bowl of vegetables or a couple pieces of fruit for each meal. They would do weekly weigh-ins. If you went overweight or you got a little bit bigger, weren't allowed to eat till you lost the weight. Completely starved. So the children would start starving and binging before the weigh-ins to make sure that they got to the weight that they were supposed to be at. It was different for each child, depending on age. Once they, even if they didn't gain weight, but they looked like they were filling out, starved.
I know y'all can't see my face right now, but I'm just looking at Brie like, what the absolute heck?
Yes, and once the teen girls, because 28 kids, once they started hitting puberty, the aunties would shame them for starting their period and call them dirty and say, you're having disgusting thoughts about boys, you're unclean, you need, yeah, all
that stuff. Yes, because we can control if we have a period.
The aunties had periods too, so I don't know what the hell they're talking about. So once the children hit the age of 14... they were put through the initiation process that the adults were, where they would be put into a room, injected with LSD, and they would be dosed every 12 hours. During one of these, the second oldest child, Leanne, when she was going through her process, she started screaming so loudly that the neighbors heard and they called the police. When the police arrived, Anne took the police and like made them tea and was like, oh, how are you? There's no children here.
Oh, I'm the perfect.
Yeah, and the aunties... hid the children in a hole in the wall. All 28 of them shoved them in a hole in the wall covered by a painting near the basement. So if the police went and looked around, they could see that there was no children there and they weren't lying. Even though they were fucking lying. And if the children would be quiet and would cooperate, because they were taught that if they didn't and the police found them, they would be beaten and raped by the police. And the police would not help them. But and then also, if they made a noise, they would be beaten either way. So it was either way, it was be quiet or get beaten.
Yeah.
So they would lie to the, you know, they would just lie. And anybody, news cameras one time came to the property. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we don't have any children here. That's false. Our children are like off at school doing this, doing that. They just made sure no one knew about it because they didn't want anyone in their business. So when the oldest Sarah Moore grew up, she became more assertive and began arguing with the aunties and all the other people, especially Anne. They got into fights all the time.
This is the well-known one, right?
Yes, she's the one that's well-known. The other ones also have come out and said stories, but she wrote a book, so she's like, in the documentary called The Family on Stars, it's mostly her talking.
Okay.
So by 1985, the oldest, Sarah and Leanne, were allowed to befriend one outsider each. They also started going to regular high school. Like, they were allowed on the outside, but their rules was they could go to friends' houses, but friends were not allowed on the compound at all. So the girls slowly started, so Sarah started sneaking out at night and going for what she called walks. One time she decided to break into someone's house and she just stole food. And she took it back to the compound and hid it for her siblings to eat. And this became a normal thing they did. Like, I don't know how often, but like once a week, once a night, one of the kids would escape, go steal food. So the neighbors in the 70s, they were like on edge because they're like, who's breaking into our houses? And like, all they're doing is stealing food. And they didn't steal that much. They would steal like a couple pieces of food and go. Because they didn't have anywhere to hide it. They would hide it in leaves on the property. Mm-hmm. So you never knew if someone's going to find it. But if they found it, they would think it was just animals or something.
Yeah.
So one time, Sarah broke the rules and she brought a friend onto the compound. Not to hang out, like, literally, she's like, I need to stop at my house. And the friend happened to come with her. But when Anne found out, they got into a huge fight and Sarah was banished and Anne told her to go die in a gutter. Little did Anne know this would come to bite her in the ass, because Sarah's one friend, her family took her in, and they introduced her to a private investigator known as Helen D., who had been investigating the family for several years. Sarah went to this family and was like, this is what's been happening to me. This is what's happening to my siblings. They're back on the compound. Why
did Anne think that Sarah was brainwashed enough not to say anything?
Yes.
Okay.
Pretty much. And she was scared. She thought she had brainwashed her to be scared of police. Mm, keep in mind, she thought police would rape her. And so they talked to this lady, Helen D., where from Helen, Moore learned that Anne was a fraud and that she herself was not her daughter, and she had in fact been adopted/kidnapped, because she says adopted, but she was essentially kidnapped.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said says like that. In 1987, because of Sarah and all the information she gave, the police were able to raid the compound where they found all the drugs, LSD and everything, and they found the other 27 kids. Anne wasn't there. Anne was in New York, I believe, at the time, but Bill, her husband, was. And Bill grabbed one of the youngest and held on to her and, like, used her as a shield. But luckily, the police were able to get her away and all 28 kids were safe. But while this was all happening, of course, Anne has to protect her cult. So she left a voicemail for all her followers saying that the Holy Spirit planned for this. And this raid was meant to happen. It's all part of the divine plan.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
And let me guess, they believed it.
But this was the beginning of the end, because that raid, a lot of the members were like, okay, this bitch is crazy. Like, a lot of them didn't know what was happening to the kids and the drugs and stuff like that. So a lot of the members started leaving, and it was a lot of them lost everything. Because you got to think about it. It was politicians. It was lawyers. It was doctors. It was nurses. She had 500 members in the medical field that lost their licenses, and lawyers weren't able to practice, and politicians lost their seats and all that stuff. And a couple of them were able to readjust and didn't lose anything because they weren't as in the cult as some of the others, but a lot of them lost everything. Many of the children were taken into custody and placed in care, and they're fine. They obviously, a lot of them later in life did kill themselves due to what happened to them. The aunties faced criminal charges and were eventually convicted of fraudulently obtaining money from the Department of Social Security. Not surprising. They scammed a bunch of people. So after all this happened, they were finally able to get enough stuff to bring Anne and Bill to trial. In 1990, former group solicitor Peter Kibbe started cooperating with the police and confessed to forging birth records on the orders of Anne. One of the former aunties, Patricia McFarlane, gave information to the police about the adoption scams. Anne and Bill, between the raid and when they had to go back to Australia, fled to New York. Luckily, America also doesn't play with child abuse.
Right.
And they extradited them back to Australia for their trial in August of 1993. So they were facing criminal charges. You're going to be pissed. You're about to be so fucking mad. The trial did not, they decided not to have the children testify because they did not want to further traumatize them.
Okay, that I'm okay with.
But because the children didn't testify, they did not have enough evidence to prove that it happened. And because Anne was now an elderly woman, and because her and Bill did not have any prior convictions, they only had to pay $5,000 in fines for making false statements regarding the adoption of more than the other 27 children.
I wish I could see my face right now. I am digging my nails into my hands right now because I am so angry. Are you kidding me?
Nothing. They didn't get in trouble for anything. They just had to pay $5,000 each.
Okay, but why couldn't, like, Sarah?
Nope. They didn't want to traumatize any of the children.
I mean, that's fair.
I understand. No, I fully agree. I fully understand why, because it would have been hard on the children to look at her and look at the aunties and, like, go over this. And a lot of them were so young, because you got to think about it. There was 28 children, and the oldest was a teenager. So you imagine how young the other ones were.
Yeah.
So I get why, but it also, it sucks. And she's never going to get, she's dead now, thankfully. But
I get where they're coming from, but at the same time, this is so infuriating because, like,
I know.
If that's all they had.
So in 2009, Anne did an interview with Australia 60 Minutes, where she denies ever abusing the children and said that the people who accused her of mistreating her children were lying bastards and she would love to put them right but could not. She stated that she could have sued her critics but decided against it because her critics were right. It makes me so mad. But on that same interview, Moore and Anne had an emotional reunion, which was covered by the Herald Sun newspaper. Anne, who was then 87, said she was now ready to die after being reunited with her favorite daughter. The daughter that you banished is her favorite daughter. The reunion took place at Aeon's Still Thing compound in Victoria. She said she loved Anne, but she had mixed feelings about her, still regarding her as being responsible for the abuse of her and the other children, and blamed the aunties mostly. That was as far as Anne would go in acknowledging any wrongdoings. Moore said otherwise she was unrepentant. She described Anne as a powerful and charismatic person and thought that she initially meant well in creating the cult and collecting the children. I don't know. These acts, she thought, were Anne's compensation and delusional repair for her own childhood marred by the absent father and a psychotic mother.
Okay, yes, but that's not an excuse for kidnapping and abusing children.
Anne never admitted. She never thought she did anything wrong with scamming people, with the abuse for the children, for telling the aunties what to do to the children. She said she was not guilty. She was completely innocent the whole time. Good news. Moore, though, ended up becoming a doctor to help children like her. And she helped a bunch of people. But she did have an accident in, I want to say 2010. No, I mean 2006 or something. She had an accident that left her paralyzed and she had to be in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. Aww. And she did write a book about her experience called Unseen, Unheard, Unknown, which I really wanted to get for this research, but it's like $200 on Amazon because it's not published anymore. It's like impossible to find.
Yikes.
The cult still exists to this day in Australia.
Okay.
It's still ongoing. People still follow this religion.
Okay, but are they still like kidnapping kids and stuff?
No. Anne's dead. Anne died in June 19th, 2019 and kicked the bucket.
Thankfully.
Yeah, she kidnapped kids. She abused kids.
All she did was pay $5,000. That irks me.
Yeah. She didn't get tried for any of it. And she scammed people out of millions of dollars, and people still follow her religion. But she didn't even really have a religion. It was a mixture of a whole bunch of, she said she was Jesus, but they also were following Hinduism and stuff like that. More eventually, like, kind of, she became a Buddhist. That's how she found peace with everything that happened to her, was Buddhism. And she had a Buddhist funeral and everything in 2016 when she passed. But yeah, that is the family. It is a crazy Australian cult that I have been looking into for a while.
I'm glad I didn't look into it beforehand because, I mean, it was really interesting to, like, listen to you. Because I knew nothing about it. Like, I mean...
Yeah, not many people do. It's not a very well-known cult for how big it was. It was really only well-known in Australia. Like, in America, specifically. I don't know about the rest of the world. In America, it's not very well-known.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of happens with cases, like...
Outside of the U.S.
Yeah,
America's very self... Like, they care about themselves.
We don't have a lot of cults in America.
Yeah, we do.
Do we? I don't know.
I'll tell you all about the cults. I'll be your cult leader, like Spencer.
I'll be your serial killer guide.
Anyway, thank you guys for listening to episode number 3.
Make sure y'all check us out on Instagram.
At Corrupted Beings Podcast.
And on Twitter at...
Beings Podcast.
Follow us on Facebook.
Corrupted Beings Podcast.
And if you're feeling inclined, as Morbid says, please follow our Patreon.
Patreon.com/Corrupted Beings.
And if you want to send us an email to give us some case ideas or stuff to talk about, please email us at...
CorruptedBeingsPodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Peace out.